Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. When it comes to work, pay, and gender, the story has long been and continues to be a wage gap that favors men. Last year, for example, women made just 77% of what men earned, according to the Institute for Women's Policy Research.
But a recent study from MIT finds a starkly different kind of gender gap, one that shows girls and young women outperforming boys and young men in both education and the workplace. While at the top of our society, power and money are still held overwhelmingly by men, among more ordinary people, it's the women who are attaining higher levels of education, skills, and wage growth, and it's the men who are falling behind.
This is particularly true for men and women who've entered the workforce relatively recently. For example, among younger workers, women were 23% more likely to have attained a college degree than men, all of which helps explain why the earnings of females have increased in recent decades, while males' workers' earnings have declined.
According to the study, this growing gap in education success and earnings between male and female workers represents a tectonic shift in American society. The question is, what exactly explains it? Why are so many men falling behind while many women are able to move ahead? Well, joining us now is David H. Autor. He's a professor of economics at MIT, co-author of the study, which is entitled Wayward Sons, the Emerging Gender Gap in Labor Markets and Education. And Professor Autor, great to have you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks very much. A pleasure to be here. And let me also mention my co-author, Melanie Wasserman.
Right, who's not with us. We did mention you were a co-author, so
yep.
Good to get her name in there. Well, tell us more about precisely what's happening between men and women in this emerging gap in education and educational attainment. What's sort of the top two or three lines?
Sure. Well, over the last three decades, the labor market trajectory of males in the U.S. has turned downward along four dimensions. Skills acquisition, that means primarily college attainment, college completion, employment to population rates. So men are participating less, fewer of them are working. Occupational stature, meaning moving up into the professions as opposed to staying in place or moving downwards towards lower paid, lower skill occupations. And also real wage levels. Real wage levels of median males have fallen and have fallen substantially for non-college workers. And pretty much across the board, they've risen for women. Much more so for more highly educated women.
I see. So what explains this story of diverging fortunes between men and women? You make a link to the increasing number of single-parent households and suggest that for whatever reason, boys, younger men, appear to come out of these family structures less well-equipped.
Let me take that's where we end up, but let me take you a little along the way to
sure.
get there. We would say, and let me say that we don't claim to fully understand this. Part of the purpose of our paper is really just to point out the facts. They deserve attention. They deserve further study. So we're partly just trying to sketch out the landscape. However, I would say a starting point is the labor market. Over the last 30 years, there's really been a substantial adverse demand shift against non-college males in particular, the decline of blue-collar production jobs, the decline of union jobs, the decline of good middle-income work for people who don't have a four-year college degree. One thing that's incredibly striking if you look at the data is that the groups of males that have seen declining earnings, so we might say, young Caucasian men with a high school only degree, or middle-aged African American men with who have not completed high school or high school only degree. The groups that have had declining earnings have also had substantial declines in labor force participation. They're working less. Usually, if we see their wages going down and their employment going down simultaneously, we interpret that as a demand shift. It's not that they're getting so wealthy they just choose not to work. It's that basically the labor market's not offering them attractive opportunities. Looks like there's adverse demand shifts against those groups of men. Their earnings have declined. Their employment has declined. Simultaneously, incarceration among those groups have increased, dependence on Social Security disability insurance benefits. And in a variety of ways, they don't seem to be adapting that successfully to the labor market changes that are occurring. So probably the starkest indicator of this is that the four-year college completion rate among men 24 to 35 years old is almost no higher now than it was 30 years ago, at a peak right before around when the Vietnam War ended.
Whereas women are signing up for college and completing college at a much greater rate.
Let me give you an alarming statistic, or at least a startling one. In 1980, among men and women in the U.S., 25 to 34 years old, men were 7 percentage points more likely to have completed a college degree. That's about a quarter more likely, but 7 percentage points more likely. Mm-hmm. In 2008, among men and women of the same age range, 25 to 34, women were 8 percentage points more likely to have completed a college degree. Now, the growing college education of women is all to the good. That's wonderful. What is startling is the incredible plateauing of college attainment among American males. And there's no reason that it needs to be this low. If we look across other countries, other European countries to which we frequently compare ourselves, the U.S. has substantially fallen behind.
See, it's so interesting because, I mean, we hear again and again and again that to get by in this new changing global economy, college education more and more important. It seems like women are hearing that call, men are not.
Not so much. And it's substantially skewed by household income and educational attainment. Mm-hmm. So boys and girls of high income, high education households are going on for college, although women are going on more frequently. And then as we move down into below the median of the income distribution or the bottom quartile, the college completion rates are extremely low, but much lower among men. Now, I want to talk about the tie into the family. So I mentioned that males that have had declining earnings have also had declining labor force participation. They've also had declining marriage rates. Similarly, the women of the same education and race groups and age groups that would potentially marry these men, assuming that men and women basically tend to marry people of similar education and age, their marriage rates have declined along with them. In other words, as the earnings of white high school dropout males have fallen, the marriage rates of white high school dropout females have fallen. However, fertility hasn't changed very much. So what that means is increasingly the children of these men and women are growing up in single-parent households. Now, I don't want to knock single-parent households. It's a heroic thing to be a single parent. I have three children and I'm fortunate to have a partner, and that's a really hard job. it is the case that kids who grow up in single-parent households have less access to financial resources. Mm-hmm. They typically will attend poorer schools and be exposed to more violence and other adverse influences just because there isn't as much money around, much more likely to be poor. And, of course, there's also a deficit of parental time. And moreover, for boys in those households, there's also a deficit of a male parental role model in the house. So girls being raised in a single-parent household, the vast majority of which are female-headed households, they'll have a same-sex parental role model. Boys will not. And there's a lot of evidence. I don't want to say it's conclusive, but descriptively, that boys in single-parent households do relatively worse than their sisters. Mm. So the boy-girl gap in educational attainment, in disruptive behavior in the classroom, is larger in single-parent households than in two-parent households.
Right.
So the ironic result is that declining fortunes of males in the labor market changes the marriage market in a way that creates disadvantage for children, but particularly for boys.
Hmm. And I know that your study doesn't answer this question definitively, but it certainly raises it. Why the difference between boys and girls coming out of a single family environment? Why is it more detrimental to the boys' development?
Well, I mean, I think the leading hypothesis, although really by no means a certainty, is the parental role model factor, the involvement of males in the child's upbringing. So, you know, the best evidence indirect that we have on this, a famous study, the Moving to Opportunity study, spearheaded by Lawrence Katz of Harvard University and Jeffrey Kling, recently at the Brookings Institution in Princeton. And families were randomly assigned vouchers to move from subsidized inner city housing to low poverty tract neighborhoods. And so of the families moved out, and almost all these families were mother-headed households. And in those families, what was remarkable 10, 15 years later is that the daughters of those households moved out to the suburbs compared to the daughters who stayed behind in the housing projects or stayed in the inner city. The daughters who moved out did much better in terms of work, in terms of high school graduation. It had a clear, significant positive effect. The boys of those households did significantly worse in terms of education, involvement in criminal activity, involvement in gangs, and so on. One explanation, and really this is a hypothesis, not proof, is that they were moved out away from male role models, right? That once they moved out of the area in which they had grown up, the father figures weren't present, the other mentors were not present. Now, that may not be the only explanation. Mm. It could just be that, you know, black youths moved into, you know, relatively affluent suburbs just have special hardships. Mm. So I don't want to say definitive, but that's the, I think that's the leading explanation.
Well, let me get another perspective into this conversation. Mary Blair Loy, she's director of graduate studies and the founding director of the Center for Research on Gender in the Professions at the University of California, San Diego, and she joins us now. And Mary Blair Loy, good to have you.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Well, you've listened to David Autor, and I'm wondering, I know you sort of look at different levels of sort of the economic situation here, but what's your response to this study, and what's your view about what explains it?
Well, I really enjoyed reading Autor and Wasserman's study, and they're updating, as Professor Autor said, some trends that we've known about really since the 1970s. This problem of the working class and lower-income Americans challenged with the decline of the manufacturing sector, decline of male unions, increasing economic inequality, and the increasing gap between college-educated and non-college-educated workers. I think it's a mistake, though, to emphasize this as a gender issue. If we overlook the fact that this is really a social class issue, and calling this the decline of men is inaccurate.
Well, in David Autor's defense, I called it the decline of men to sort of set up the discussion, so he didn't actually use that term.
But it's probably in the paper.
But go ahead, Mary. I'm sorry.
Yes, and you know, it's also in the New York Times article that I was grateful for because it brought Professor Otter's work to my attention. So it's an easy label to slap on to a very complicated issue. And it's an important issue. However, it overlooks not that Professor Otter's work does this, but that what might be described as the media oversimplification of some of the story overlooks how gender affects people's experience of working class or middle class opportunities. And similarly, class shapes gender. So, for example, my center has recently released a report co-authored by myself, Aaron Seck, and Laura Pachenko on the persistence of male power and prestige in the professions. We specifically focus on the professions of law, medicine, and science and engineering. So in the service economy, women are overrepresented in the low-wage service occupations, such as retail and hospitality, and they continue to face barriers well beyond their control in the professions, in the higher prestige, higher power, higher paid service jobs. So the overall story, if we focus on the professions, we might call this the decline of women. The point is simply that either label is too simplistic. And we have problems facing working class and increasingly middle class Americans in this economy. Women who have done what you're supposed to do, according to the economists, and gone to college, continue to be segregated into sex, female-dominated majors. Their share of, for example, science and engineering majors has stalled out in the 2000s. And even those who go on to get science or professional degrees in medicine or law continue to face all kinds of barriers.
Mary Blair Loy, because our time is so tight and it's actually running down, I want to get David Autor's response to what you put on the table there. So David Autor, I mean, respond to that idea that this sort of gender gap is still sort of alive and well as it always was.
I think you can... As we said at the beginning, you can look at different parts of the labor market and draw different conclusions. Certainly, there's no question there are many more men CEOs. There are many more male tenured professors. There are many more men earning millions of dollars a year in finance. However, I would say those gaps actually have closed a lot. The gender earnings gap is smallest, at least in percentage terms, among the most educated workers, among people with post-college education and college education. Women have movement into professional, technical, and managerial occupations has been quite remarkable over the last 20 years, and it's a very positive development. So when I talk about the purpose of our study is to highlight males achieving less than we would expect that they should, not to lament the success of women, which we celebrate.
Sure. Well, it's such a fascinating subject. I feel like we're just able to sort of scratch the surface of this study and this whole conversation. But listeners, the conversation continues on RadioBoston.org, so please post your comments there. You can also see a copy of the study from David Autor. He's a professor of economics at MIT, and the study is called Wayward Sons, The Emerging Gender Gap in Labor Markets and Education. David Autor, thanks for coming in. We appreciate
a pleasure.
It.
Thanks for your questions.
And Mary Blair Loy, she's the director of graduate studies and the founding director of the Center for Research on Gender in the Professions at University of California, San Diego. Mary Blair Loy, thank you as well.
Thank you.
Coming up, writer Gish Jen and how Western writing and Eastern thinking can come together in the form of the novel. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.